Which brings me to sex. Everything eventually brings me to sex, but not always in creatures so small. Fruit flies. Stephen Goodwin at Magdalen College in Oxford can't get enough of it.
Why do you study reproduction, in fact, the act of reproduction in fruit flies?
That's a very good question. One of the reasons we look at the fly nervous system is that it's comparatively simple when you compare it to our own nervous system. So a fly has about 100,000 neurons. We have billions of neurons. So we sort of use it as a proxy for looking at more simple behavior, although fruit flies are capable of all sorts of complex behaviors that they're probably not aware of, including learning and memory, love and hate, essentially.
Love and hate?
Well, maybe I'm being extreme, but certainly flies can fly, which is something we can't do. What we're interested in is what are the differences in the nervous system and how do these give rise to characteristic differences in sexual behavior? And this is everything from the way that the fly looks and the way that the fly behaves, essentially. And the flies will, when you immediately put the male and female together, they'll start courting each other. And they go through a whole series of stereotypical behaviors where the male essentially woos the female. And if the male is the right species, I mean, obviously the female and the male have to recognize each other. So there's olfactory and gustatory cues and visual cues that both the male and female respond to. But if the male likes the female, he will show off to her essentially, and he actually sings to her. He vibrates one wing and sings her a love song. And if she's getting all the right cues from him and he's the right species, she will actually slow down and sanction a mating. And then the two will be locked in bliss for the next 20 minutes.
20 minutes is not that swift.
20 minutes is pretty good. As an Irishman, I would say 20 minutes is pretty good. But anyway, I mean, 20 minutes. And then within the first 10 minutes, sperm and seminal fluid is transferred. And then, you know, what we're looking at is actually what the underlying neural circuitry and what the differences in those neural circuitry between males and females is, and what are the kind of differences that go on within the development of the nervous system and how that comes together in the adult to give you essentially behavior.
But tell me, how do you get into such a tiny nervous system to find out what's going on?
And the way we do it is using genetics. Fly sex is determined genetically. And as such, because it's innate, because it's hardwired, and because a male and a female don't need any experience, there's a genetic basis to it. And this allows us to look at mutants and how mutants affect these behaviors. And two mutants that my lab and many other labs now work on as well are a gene called Fruitless and a gene called Double Sex. And in the fly world, the name gives away the kind of behavior that the mutant exhibits here, okay? So with Fruitless mutants, I was part of a group of people in the 90s that ended up cloning the gene responsible for this. And it's a kind of interesting gene because it's largely expressed in the male nervous system. If a male is missing this gene, he actually, his sexual orientation goes out the window and he starts courting both males and females. And on the other hand, the other gene, Double Sex, is actually found in both sexes. And this gene, classically, if you're missing this gene, you're actually intersexual. You look both male and female.
Go for everybody, do you?
As an intersexual fly, you're pretty confused because you both look and behave like a male and a female. And in addition to looking that way, flies also use pheromones. And if you're an intersexual fly, you have a mixed pheromone profile. So in fact, in some cases, you might be arousing yourself because you actually look and smell like a male and a female. So they become very difficult to work with behaviorally. But the next step from looking at the genes that are responsible and disrupt these behavioral pathways is then to clone the genes. So what we can do genetically and how we get into manipulating these neurons is that once we've cloned these genes, we can make transgenics that specifically express only in these neurons that the gene is expressed in. And then there's a whole plethora of wonderful genetic tools that allow you to disrupt that neuron. You can disrupt that neuron, switch that neuron off, or you can activate that neuron. And in fact, here at Oxford, we have Gero Miesenbach, who is the godfather, essentially, of optogenetics. And optogenetics and techniques like this are widely being used now in all sorts of different nervous systems. And actually, where he first pioneered this was in the fly. And this is where you have this wonderful ability to be able to activate a neuron and see what the consequences of doing that. So, you know, I could show you videos here of flies that we have where we're expressing optogenetic markers in these neurons, and we can make a male behave and show male behavior even in the absence of a female. And similarly, you can shut down the behavior in an animal by inactivating the neuron as well. So
I see. Well, what you're actually saying is that by understanding how the genes work, you can, if you like, play the orchestra of the nervous system and work out how it operates. But this is a leap that you'll find uncomfortable, but occurs to most of us. The insects do it that way. Is there anything that you can tell from this sort of study about how we humans might operate?
Yeah, this is, we always get this question. It's an awkward one. Part of me gets angry a little bit about it because
that's why I hesitated.
Yeah. Well, no, it's just everybody wants a justification for, does it happen in us? Why are we so central to biology? But I guess we are fascinated in ourselves. But first and foremost, I'd say in the fly, it's an intrinsically interesting question all of its own. How does a nervous system, a simple nervous system, even in a fly, which I repeat, is capable of quite complex behavior, how does that come about and what are the mechanisms involved? And what I should say is, whilst there are no obvious candidate genes that are like, say, fruitless or... Well, actually, it's not true for double sex. There are double sex homologs in the mammalian genome, but there doesn't seem to be an obvious one for fruitless, although fruitless is a transcription factor that's a member of a large family of proteins, which we do have proteins in our body that look like this. But I think the same kind of mechanisms will be operating, but I don't think anyone's looked at it in enough detail yet.
Mind boggles, but can you understand why it was that Sarah Palin actually said that she would ban fruit fly research?
No. no comment without becoming saying something libelous.
Well, you know she did.
Yeah, no, I'm aware she did, but I guess if you talk to a moron, you'll get a moronic answer back, so...
What's going to happen next in this line of research?
So the next thing is that we figured out some of the genes that are responsible for this. We've looked where they're expressed in the fly, and we've started to manipulate these neurons to see what these neurons are capable of behaviorally. And the idea now is that what we're trying to figure out is this whole idea of what's called the connectome. And you've probably heard of mammalian people talking about the brain connectome and the sort of challenges that exist. And this is trying to basically map all the component elements of the nervous system and how they make connections to each other and how they come together to give behavior, essentially. So we're at the kind of step at the moment where we're really just defining what these neurons are capable of doing. And the plan next is essentially to start to see how those kind of neurons, what the properties of those neurons are and how they talk to each other and how they're connected to one another. And then more importantly, actually, is that many of the behavioral studies we do are in a very situation. You put two flies in a test tube and you ask them to go at it. But actually what would be really important, and colleagues of mine are actually starting to address this, where you actually look at social interactions and you put flies in groups and ask how they respond and how things change in a social context. And also there's a learned component to fly sexual behavior too. And where does that circuitry lie in this? So whilst everything seems robotic and innate, flies actually do remember from a lousy experience or a bad sexual experience and can modify their behavior accordingly.
They live long enough to do that, do they?
Oh, yes. They might have a little bit of a James Dean. But, you know, in the short time that they live, they pack a lot of behavior in.
And I can't help wondering whether Stephen Goodwin at the University of Oxford will eventually be able to manipulate those flies to mate as he chooses. Now, that's a sex god, isn't it? Next week, a tribute to Edward Lear, his beasts, his poetry and connections to Australia. Production today by David Fisher and Charlie McCune. I'm Robin Williams, and of course I haven't been to Eton. Not yet.